been. It's where I found Jesus.
To the Jeff Plus Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106. That is the text line. Just a bunch of a lot of polling data out there and a lot of interesting races up and down the ballot. I'm going to talk about all in due course, so please stay tuned for that. Also still to come, Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News. That's about an hour from now. Talk about his new single poll out maybe about an hour ago, but some surprising numbers there. Mo Brooks now within the margin of error of the lead, believe that or not. Call to Steve Flowers, joins us at 11 o'clock hour, and former state senator Dick Brubaker. That's at 11 o'clock hour as well. But joining us now, very pleased to have this next gentleman on. He's very kind to come on when we invite him. He represents the 6th Congressional District, Congressman Gary Palmer on with us. Congressman, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. You're very kind to invite me. You're pretty consistent.
Well, we like to get you guys on, but I think it's it adds a lot to this show at least. But also when you're on other shows, it's a good thing that you do being available. But you'll need to hear that from me. Let's kick it off here, Congressman. We were kind of talking about this off air, and there's a lot of things going on nationally, right? That make you think that it is lining up, that the left has really jumped the shark, and the Republicans look at striking distance of picking up even more seats than maybe they had expected, because the Democratic Party has just gone so far to the left.
Yeah, we're talking about this primary in Oregon. Kurt Schrader, who's in his seventh term, Democrat, actually not part of the squad. He's not one of these guys that has, just gone off the rails to the left. And he's trailing badly behind a lady who raised less than $900,000, and almost $400,000 of it came from the Working Families Party of America, which is basically the Communist Party. I mean, this is... they're no longer running secretly as socialist. They're out front with it. And if she were to win, even the Democrats are conceding that the Republicans will take that seat.
Yeah, and it's just they're out of the mainstream. I mean, all of this talk about woke and it really is becoming a real problem for Democrats. They may have gone so far left it. It maybe it pleases a lot of the ideological components on cable news, whatever, but it's just not, the country isn't there, and I don't think it can get there. It's always been sort of center right, but they can say what is, what conventional wisdom is in the way the country is, but it's just not reality.
Well, the Democrat Party that you and I grew up with, Jeff, doesn't exist anymore. They've destroyed it. And you've got a few Democrats in the House that are still reminiscent of the old Democrat Party, but even some of the old line, like Pelosi and some of these others, they've taken a hard, hard turn to the left. Another interesting thing that's happened is the district lines in New York, when they did redistricting, their state legislature went so far out of bounds that they were literally going to take us down to only three Republicans from New York State. And a Democrat state Supreme Court redrew the lines. We now have a chance to pick up to win as many as eight seats. So the things are looking positive for us, and I think when we roll out our commitment to America, the agenda that we're committing to the American people, that we're going to introduce this legislation and govern by, I think things will improve even more.
Is that sort of the plan? Because I remember 1994. I mean, I was a young college student, but the media creeped up on. They didn't see it being that big of a wave. a lot of people did out there, but a big component of that, it was Newt Gingrich's contract with America, and just having something tangible to say, this is what we want to accomplish, and having something to run on, rather than, you know, the Democrat playbook was beat Trump, and you could probably do well one election cycle, beat Biden, but having some kind of policy to back that up seems to be a positive step, right?
Yeah, I think elections ought to be about contrast. What are you for? What will the country look like if you have all three branches of government again? Which that's really what we're doing. We are working day and night to get the House back. My colleagues over on the Senate side are doing the same thing to get the Senate back. But we've got to get the White House back as well, so that the stuff we pass can get through the Senate and get to the desk of a president who will sign it. But you have to build momentum for that. And you do that by laying down markers. These are the bills we're going to introduce. This is why this is important. And this is what how we'll govern when we have all three branches. We'll pass a ton of stuff out of the House in the next Congress. It'll still be subject to filibuster in the Senate. We will not have 60 seats in the Senate, short of one of these God parts, the Red Sea type miracles. But whatever the Senate passes will get vetoed by Biden. And my attitude is we ought to send so much stuff to Biden's desk that he'll have his arm in a sling from having to veto everything. But that's how you lay down these markers and build momentum going into 24.
So you've already kind of, it sounds like there's no reason to think Biden will see the election results in November and maybe what Bill Clinton did, triangulate and maybe have more of a working relationship with Republicans. Is there any reason to think that that's in the realm of possibilities?
Under normal circumstances, I would say yes, but you've got to look at who he has heading up these federal agencies. Mayorkas is an absolute disaster, and in my opinion, should probably be impeached. Jennifer Granholm, Department of Energy, is completely out of her league, clueless. You look at how they've handled things through the State Department and what a mess that's been, especially with the Afghan. And I could go on and on and on. With people who are just hardcore leftists or just totally incompetent for the jobs that they have. So I think it makes a pivot more difficult when you have people like he has heading up the various agencies that would have to actually carry out the mandates of Congress or even what he agrees to. And I don't know. I hope that he'll come to a point where he realizes that we've got to do something to help the economy and help people, particularly with runaway inflation like we're having right now, especially on energy and regulatory costs, because it's having a very devastating impact on American families.
Congressman, let's move to foreign policy. This $40 billion appropriation for Ukraine, and I get it's not just old, it's a blank check to Ukraine. Some of that's humanitarian aid. Some of that's to replenish our weapons stockpiles and whatnot. But certainly one of those, seems like a lot of Republicans could have gone either way. You voted for it. Talk to us a little bit about that, if you could.
Well, as I've told some of my folks who have reached out to me, and I hadn't had that many people reach out to me about it, is that if they had access to the intelligence that I do, I'd say most of them wouldn't be contacting me about it. Obviously, with the Democrats in control of both houses of Congress, there were some things that were put in that I don't like, but because of what I know in terms of what's happening on the ground in Ukraine and what our needs are here, particularly, and you touched on it, there over half the money goes for weapons, and a substantial portion of that goes for replenishing our own stockpiles. And then there was another provision in there to provide supplemental pay for the 82nd Airborne who's deployed over there. You know, again, we can't tell you everything that we know, but at some point you got to trust that, that we're making the right decision on these things. And of course the Democrats are going to stick stuff in there that to try to get us to make a bad vote, that somehow they can use it against us. But this was something I felt like we needed to do, and particularly on the weapon side, it should have been done a while back. And I know there's some people that are concerned about, you know, what's going on in Ukraine. They don't see it in the bigger picture, but as I tell people, I know people in Alabama are watching the vote, people around the country are watching the vote, but they need to understand who else is watching the vote. Obviously, Vladimir Putin was watching it, but so was Xi Jinping in China. And that's huge. If they see that we as a country are willing to continue to support the Ukrainians, then I think it sends a clear message that we'll do the same thing for Taiwan. And we cannot afford to lose Taiwan to the Chinese. 70% of your semiconductors and microchips come from Taiwan. 90% of your advanced ones come from there. And I think if China invaded Taiwan, those factories would be destroyed, and I think we'd be in a worldwide depression. The Ayatollah was watching that vote. Kim Jong-un in North Korea. So you got to look at it in the bigger picture and understand that there are things happening right now that could seriously impact our future.
Well, the Taiwan thing is an interesting situation. I mean, I guess I haven't heard anybody really put it in those terms that if indeed the China does act, and given the manufacturing in Taiwan, it puts us at a real disadvantage. But after COVID, when COVID set into 2020, there's a lot of talk about getting supply chains and getting a lot of this at least domestically, or at least in a more friendly country, be it in Latin America or something. And none of that seems to have happened yet. What do you think it's going to take? Is it going to take something that serious for the United States to kind of push these companies in that direction?
Actually, things are happening. I think there's four, but I know there are at least three semiconductor plants under construction right now. These are very highly technical facilities that you don't build overnight. It's probably going to be another 3 years before these plants are in production. We're very aware of that, Jeff. And, you know, I've had discussions with the former Canadian ambassador to the United Nations about working with Canada for mining the rare earth elements that you have to have for microchips and for semiconductors and manufacturing that stuff here in North America, and even setting up a program where we near source our supply chain. That would include building things in South and Central America and in the Caribbean. But we're behind the eight ball, so to speak, in that regard. So we can't abandon Taiwan, because if China invaded Taiwan and took over that island, we lost those facilities. I'm not kidding. It would create a worldwide depression. There's also other issues about this going from a conflict in Ukraine to becoming a world war if China were to attack Taiwan.
Do you have confidence in this administration to do the right thing if China does act on Taiwan?
They have surprisingly involved in Ukraine, but I think part of that is because of how the NATO nations and the European Union has finally had a come to Jesus moment about Russia. And you know, the Biden administration wants to say that they've led the effort to unify. That's bull. These countries are sitting literally in the shadow of Russia. So that this was a wake up call for them. I think something similar to that could happen regarding Taiwan, because if China controls the South China Sea and the Strait of Taiwan, that's about 80 plus percent of your shipping comes through those routes, and it would give China the ability to literally suffocate Japan economically. So I think if China attacked Taiwan, there's a high probability that China would fight. And then it would put tremendous pressure on Australia and on the United States. I think India is a problem in that they try to play both sides against the middle. They're going to defend their borders. I think Modi would like to see China get in a situation where they are getting trouble, and the U.S. gets in trouble, Russia's in trouble, China, and all of a sudden India is in a position to become an economic powerhouse. I'm just telling you, there's so many things that, and so many moving parts here that are interconnected, that to single out one bill related to this situation in Ukraine is fairly short-sighted. And I don't disagree with those who think that we should have more oversight over that appropriations, but I think that's true of the entire Biden administration. We need much, much stronger oversight over what the Biden administration is doing.
Real quick, last question. We'll get you out of here on this, Congressman. Republican primary Tuesday. Do you feel, not asking you to talk about any of the candidates in particular, but do you feel good about where the party is right now?
Well, I do about where we are in the House, because we are actually going to lay out the agenda for what we're going to do. We want the voters to have the information they need to make a clear choice, and I think the choice will be abundantly clear. And so I feel good about where we're going, but at the same time, we're just about to enter the fourth quarter, and the game's not won. And I think if people out there are not helping, they need to get out and help. We're all in this together, and I'm pray that people will turn out and vote. They'll grab their neighbor and get them to go vote. This needs to be one of the largest turnouts, if not the largest turnout in the history of the country.
Congressman, as always, we appreciate your time, and let's talk again soon.
Thanks for having me on, Jeff. Always enjoy it.
Thank you. That's Congressman Gary Palmer, 6th Congressional District. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.